Let's check in with golf legend John Daly.
I only spend on Moto, America's social casino. You know, I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. That's Daly. Moto Casino, hands down, has the best VIP experience. Take it from one high roller to another. Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces. If you're ready to go for the greens with me, grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host. And we're to Southeast Asia to our colleague, Charles Ortel, who's traveling. However, we turn to Charles's analysis of the whole region during this tariff war between Washington and Beijing. There's lots of collateral damage, and there might be some collateral benefit. Charles, a very good day to you. The Financial Times features an article that is a fascination to me because I'm learning about how to deal with regulation in Asia these years. Chinese exporters wash, that's in quotes, products in third countries to avoid Trump tariffs. And the country most mentioned after the obvious suspect of Vietnam is Malaysia, where you live. But all of Southeast Asia, neighboring countries, are participating. Is this something that we've already taken into account and the FT is featuring it? Or is there a phenomenon here that is fresh and the small manufacturers who are most damaged by the tariffs are have found a workaround? Good day to you, Charles.
Good day to you both. I think actually this is really shifting attention from the core problem. As attractive as Malaysia is as an economy, it's peanut size compared to China. And the real damage, I think, is being wrought inside China, where Trump's tariffs, reports suggest, are already beginning to certainly beginning to take effect. But beyond that, major suppliers like Apple and others have to make decisions. They have to decide, is China ever going to play cooperatively and according to the rule of law? And reports suggest that Apple has made that decision already. They're going to shift out of China to India. That move is gigantic and dwarfs everything that's going on in Malaysia. So that's on the one hand. On the other hand, what I see in Malaysia is that there's been inward foreign investment, large foreign investment by companies from ex-China from all over the world. Big world-beating companies are very satisfied with Malaysia as a place in which they can protect their capital, in which they can serve the local market, but also export around the world. So I don't think the FT is right in its analysis on this one.
Gordon, you have a question.
So, Charles, you have the migration of factories out of China to Malaysia. How long do you think this will continue, and how big do you think this will be ultimately?
I think it can continue for a very long time. Look at Singapore. Singapore is much smaller than Malaysia. It doesn't have control of its water supply the way Malaysia does, and it's very expensive. Singapore was virtually non-existent in the 50s or 60s. And it's grown to be a reliable place to store capital. In contrast, the cost of living in Malaysia remains a fraction of Singapore. The legal system in Malaysia is very straightforward for property owners. It welcomes foreign investment, and it's got decades of experience proving that. So what I'm actually seeing where I live in Penang is there's extensive real estate development on reclaimed lands where the principal buyers are people from Singapore and Hong Kong. And the arguments are very simple. You can buy a much nicer apartment or property in Penang in an attractive waterfront area than you can hope to acquire in Hong Kong or Singapore. And people are flooding in to do that. Many of those are people who either are business owners or senior executives looking to spend some time in Malaysia working, as well as retirees like me.
I want to understand the scale of the shift that's going on. Is this something that was long time coming, Charles? Because you've been very careful about reporting over the years how you travel there and what you've been thinking about it. or is this a sudden trend that's just come up in this decade? I can't measure that.
Well, I first came out to Malaysia in 1994, and I realized then that Malaysia was far more advanced than many countries in Southeast Asia. My next brother, Dan, is always fond of saying that once a country gets to 10,000 GDP per capita, it has the promise of really going up to where America is, maybe even better than that. Malaysia is past that, as Brazil once was, after being the country of the future forever. So I think on the one hand, Malaysia has a positive story going back way before China was an attractive place to invest. And on the other hand, the Chinese investment thesis has been, we're going to be a very important market, if not the most important market. So you should sacrifice now for the privilege of maybe being allowed to be a player when we dominate the world. That's a very weak argument to which many multinationals and seasoned investors succumbed. And they've been getting out for years now. And I think that flood is going to accelerate, even if Trump and Xi forge a peace here.
Gordon, you have a question.
Charles, another country of promise is one which you have visited, and that is Indonesia. What are your comments on the prospect of Indonesia as a place for destination to capital?
Well, I think Indonesia is very interesting if you're in the resource exploitation business, the shipping business, the real estate development business. I just checked the latest population figure for Indonesia is 281 million people. As we all know, it's a vast country with many islands. And I've now been to some of the major cities. I started going just on vacation to Bali in 1993. But I've been to Jakarta and Surabaya and smaller places. Everywhere you go, one thing that's striking is you see families with three or more children, something that is very rare in the United States unless you're quite rich. Oh, and it's increasingly, people aren't having children in Japan and Italy and places like that. So it's a family. What I see of it is it's a lot of growing families, hardworking people. While it is mostly a Muslim country, I would characterize it as being Muslim light. It does get a lot of visitors from the Middle East, the oil-rich Middle East. And as I say, there are quite a few major league projects around this vast country, and I think it's only getting started.
I want to go back to your comment, Charles, about investment and where money's treated best. The puzzle here is who saw China's bubble, who acted upon it, and who just avoided talking about it, a salesman. For years, we've had documented on this show Anne Stephenson Yang traveling between the magical cities popping up everywhere in China, asking who's going to live there? Why would they want to live in a fake Times Square somewhere in central China? There was no answer. It was still growing, and the Hong Kong market was growing. You know all this. Did the people who sold American investment capital in China, did they know it at the time, and there was another explanation they were offering sincerely? Or is this a great big Ponzi scheme that's going on?
Well, I think Gordon was the great visionary who saw this way before I did. But I think that the folks who invented the term BRICS, there was a Goldman Sachs, I believe, vice chairman who got credit for that. They got together on Wall Street and they sold this fiction, which I never bought into, that serious investors would want to buy basically stock that is not actually like the stock you and I invest in the U.S. and other more rigorously managed markets. And the euphoria just took shape. Now, I do know one person who is a legendary short seller, Jim Chanos, who called this long ago and definitely acted on it. But it's tough to short the equity securities in a tightly controlled country like China, because they, at the last minute, could follow the U.S. example of 2007 through 2009 and change the rules at the last second to target short sellers. That said, Chanos is one of the best of the best, and I think he's probably sitting on some huge gains.
Did they see it and not tell their investors, Charles? That's the question.
Did the investment bank? Yeah, most certainly the investment banks, elements in these large investment banks, they have often have competing points of view, which some firms believe is the best way of operating as opposed to having a firm position. But absolutely, I think much of the street went along with unregulated globalism and the premise that we ought to prepare now for Chinese victory, which would be inevitable. And let's march in lockstep. Let's write positive research reports. Let's get our retail investors into these Chinese stocks when they shouldn't have been in the first place. And now the rubber has finally met the road.
And Gordon, that comports with your opinion of the fact that they did see it and didn't emphasize it. Is that correct?
That's correct, because many reasons, but one of them is that China exerted a lot of pressure on them, especially HSBC. And so, therefore, we got opinions which did not correspond to what I think people were actually seeing.
Charles Ortel, traveling in Southeast Asia. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Visit MODO.US for the best free play social casino experience wherever you are. Modo offers a huge selection of Vegas-style games with free spins, exciting promotions, and always generous jackpots. You can waste your time with the others, or you can win at Modo. Register today at MODO.US for your free welcome bonus.
Modo is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
MODO.US.